My name is Christopher Hill. I'm a graduate student in the Civil Engineering Department at North Dakota State University. Today I'm going to be giving a presentation about the application of ballast flocculation for sanitary sewer overflow management. I'm going to start off looking at the problem of SSOs, then I'm going to give an introduction on ballast flocculation, certain applications and terms of sanitary sewer overflow, lead into a design, and then give some a conclusion on the process and its application. SSOs are the intentional or accidental release of sewer directly into the environment, typically caused by wet weather flows, rain events. You see INI or inflow and infiltration going into your infrastructure over their capacity, and therefore it's got to go somewhere. Most of the time it spills out into the environment. These are a problem because they cause a number of environmental impairments as well as public health concerns. The EPA estimates that between 27 and 45,000 SSOs occur each year, releasing approximately between 3 and 10 billion gallons of raw sewage into the environment. Typically, SSOs are managed in three steps. First, you try to identify the sources of infiltration and inflow in your infrastructure. And then you try to economically eliminate these sources. And then third, you look at capacity enhancements. Today, in terms of ballast and flocculation, I'm going to be looking more in terms of capacity enhancements and that side of the design. Ballast and flocculation, what is it? Well, by definition of ballast, you actually incorporate a material into the flocculation process, typically with a specific weight greater than 2, which increases the settling rate of these particles or these flocks in the system. All right, there's a number of different processes on the market or proprietary systems. One is ActiFlow. It uses a microsand. That's what I'm going to be focusing on today, but most of the design for these different proprietary options are it's basically the same. Densideg actually uses the higher density material in your system already. It's naturally occurring, so they just use that and they recycle that as a ballast. And then Ceroflock actually uses magnetite, which actually creates more forces for them to flock or form. We see here in this picture here that looking at conventional, typically you have a overflow rate of 0.5 gallons per minute per square foot. Lamella is another new novel process. You get about 4 gallons per minute per square feet. If you look at this in size of your footprint, you can actually just visualize the economics of this. The smaller the process, the more economical it is to treat. Looking at the ActiFlow system, it's basically just coagulation and flocculation with a ballast. It's simple enough. You start off with a coagulation tank. You add your coagulant. You do need some pre-treatment, some screening, so it doesn't hurt your equipment in the system. But you add a coagulant. It can be alum, ferric chloride, PASS, whatever, whatever you find in your pilot studies to be the best for the system or that specific wastewater. You have, rapid mixing in your coagulation tank. Your second tank is where you add your polymers and your microsand into the system. Your third tank is your maturation tank. This is where you're trying to get all the colloidal particles to run into one another to create a flock with your microsand. So it's a slower mixing. And then you have your settlement here. Your settlement, and they incorporate lamella tubes. This is a newer process too. I'm not going to get into it much, but basically it decreases the size of your settling basin. And then what happens is the sand sludge slurry gets recycled back through a hydrocyclone. And this, what this hydrocyclone does is it separates your sand again from your sludge. And your sludge goes to your sludge handling, and your microsand gets recycled back into your system. So, it stays in the system. You're not wasting the sand. You're keeping it in the system. Looking at the different applications, you can have a satellite treatment. When we say satellite, we mean that it's in your existing infrastructure. It's not by your wastewater treatment plant. You have a capacity issue that's, far away from your wastewater treatment plant. And what you want to do is, instead of running maybe a relief sewer or even constructing a large storage basin, you you apply this active flow system, but what happens is you do need to incorporate a screening process in the basin so it gets larger. Then your active flow system, your sludge has to go back into the sewer, you know, but it's at a reduced volume. We'll get into that a little later. And the EPA likes to see some disinfection at the end of this. And active flow is ideal for disinfection, especially UV, which has another small footprint because it clarifies the water so good, up to 95% removal of total suspended solids. The problem here, and it's kind of a gray area, is that the EPA requires secondary treatment for discharge into a river. But at the same time, this has been applied in different cities. One of the larger operations that I've seen done by Black and Veatch was in Salem. But they do accept this because it is a feasible alternative. It's very cost effective, is what they've seen. The second application is just a bypass. Say your infrastructure or your conveying the sewage to your wastewater treatment plant is adequate, even during wet weather flows. Maybe you used to have a combined system, and so you have that capacity. So it can make it to the wastewater treatment plant, and it gets to your headworks here, and your screening and all that's up to capacity, but your secondary treatment is, and either you can increase the capacity of your secondary treatment, or you can install this active flow system, which bypasses a portion of it, treats it or clarifies it, because it's a physical chemical process, but it doesn't accomplish that secondary treatment. And then after the two processes, you mix them, you meet your effluent standards, and you disinfect it also. So that's another option in terms of applying this to sanitary sewer overflow. Either way, whether it's a satellite treatment or a bypass system, first you need to do a flow monitoring. All right, you start off looking at your infrastructure, your flow during wet weather storm events. This hydrograph here shows in the purple here, you see kind of a dry weather flow. And then here you see a wet weather flow. And in the green, you see the rain intensities on the right there. And you see that once you get this rain event, immediately you see this shot up of the flow in the system. All right, this initial is caused by inflow, and then infiltration is kind of how it's skewed on this way. Infiltration is kind of at a slower rate. So what you do is you do this at different points in your infrastructure, and once you do that, you get an idea, and you can actually model these, what's going on in your system, in your sanitary sewer collection system. And then based on that, typically they design for a 5-year return period storm, all right, and then they put that in their model. You know, you've taken hydrology, you've seen that you can model a 5-year return period, you know what that rain event is, and then you figure out what flow you're going to have to deal with. Well, today I assumed a flow of 15 million gallons. You start off with, you design your flow, but when you're thinking about this, keep a couple things in mind. First, you can ramp up to 150% of your design flow. You can only ramp down to 50% of your design flow. And hydraulically, without damaging the system, you can even have 200% of your design flow go through your system. So for this design, I chose 10 million gallons per day, but I wanted to split it up into two trains because SSOs occur can fluctuate a lot. You know, if you have a large storm event, you can have, you know, a 5-year storm, it's going to go really high. But if you have a smaller storm and you can't treat it because it's too low, so you want to split this up to be able to ramp down and keep your efficiencies. And then you need pretreatment. All right. Typically, you use a screening, and it has to be the nominal size of the openings have to be between 3 and 6 millimeters. All right. And what I chose 2 10 million gallon per day perforated screens. All right. And 10 million gallons is large because my design flow is 10, but also you have to think about the factor of possibly it breaking down. And then you start off designing your coagulation. The chemical addition normally is determined by a jar test or pilot study. So I'm not going to look into that, but you should think about that if you're going to apply the active flow system to treat anything. Then you size the tanks. Your HRT is typically between 1 and 2 minutes. So using your design flow times your hydraulic retention time, you get approximately 3,472 gallons. Or 464 cubic feet. And then also with rapid mixing, your velocity gradient has to be between 500 and 1500 And we can estimate the theoretical power requirements behind that, approximately 25 kilowatts. The flocculation has the same design parameters. You're going to be adding polymer into this, so you're going to need to do this in your jar test or your pilot study. Sand, you add about, the system contains normally about 2 to 4 grams per liter. Your hydraulic retention time is the same, and your velocity gradient is the same. So, you know, the size of your tank and the power required for mixing is going to be the same. The maturation tank typically has an HRT of between 3 and 5 minutes. So therefore, the same thing we did before, HRT times flow, we get about 10,500 gallons, or about 1,400 cubic feet. Mixing requirements, approximately 2.8 kilowatts. The settler, you'll notice the overflow rate is quite high, but that's what this is all about. That's what the ballast does for you. Typically, it's about 0.5, but here we see that a typical design for the ActFlow system is actually 30 gallons per minute per square feet. So to calculate the area of the tank, we use our flow again, and then we divide by the overflow rate, and we get approximately 115 or 116 square feet. Length to width ratio is normally 1 to 1. This is because the equipment you use to scrape the bottom, it's normally a circular motion, so you're going to want to have approximate square. So taking your tank area, we kind of get a length and width of, in my design, I used 11 feet. Next, there's the lamellar tubes. Lamellar tubes are normally provided by a manufacturer or even by the ActFlow people. They'll actually supply this, but keep in mind that the incline has to be between 45 degrees and 60 degrees incline. Nominal spacing is about 2 inches, and the incline length is normally 3 to 6 feet, just while you're designing your system. So after everything's said and done, I used a depth of 12 feet, and I came up with the following dimensions. Total width is about 11 feet, so you got 11 by 11 for the settler, 11 by 11 for the maturation, and then 5.1 by 7.7 for both the coagulation and flocculation. Taking a closer look at the microsand, you see a mass balance here. You got the influent, the clarified water, and the hydrocyclone. So what you see is, so 6% goes into the hydrocyclone, 1.2% of that, or of the total flow, goes back into the system in terms of the sand that's being recycled, and then you have 4.8% of the flow as sludge, which eventually has to be handled. So down here you see that for 10 million gallon per day, you're going to accumulate approximately 480 gallons that you're going to have to deal with. And this is normally thick enough. I don't have exact percentages of the solids that are in this. It depends on what you're treating, how thick it is. So that can be examined in the pilot study. But when determining how much sand you need in the system, once again, you need 2 to 4 grams per liter of microsand. The coagulation does not have sand in it, so you minus the total volume of the system minus the coagulation. You get your volume here, and then in liters, it's about 95,600, and then you times that by 2 to 4, so you get about 191.2 to 382.4 kilograms in your system, in this system in particular. But you do lose some sand through the process, so you do need to, I mean, it says that it stays in the system, but you will lose some, and that depends on how fast your flow is going through the system, so that does need to be monitored. So here, when everything's said and done, here's the ActFlow system design. You see the two screens here. You got your coagulation. That's 2 trains, because I remember I split it up. Each handles 5 million gallons. So you got your coagulation, your polymer addition or your flocculation, your maturation tank, your settling, your laminar tubes, your veers, and then I ended the treatment process with UV disinfection. There's kind of an elevation view of it. Same thing, you see the laminar tubes. So in conclusion, ActFlow system is a very robust system. It's used It's been used in probably 90 applications all over America, not all for SSOs. SSOs are just catching on. This system's actually been started off being used in water treatment, just as a coagulation and flocculation. But it is a great system. I mean, if you have a problem with size of the footprint or the area that you can build on, this ballast and flocculation systems, I don't think there's anything out there that can be beat. One thing you should think of is this is only one alternative. Evaluate your other alternatives, storage, conveyance. I mean, there's a lot of options out there. This is just one of them, so don't just jump right to the ballast and flocculation. I went through a design. This design is based on literature, just typical Metcalf and Eddy coagulation and flocculation. Before you do anything, you need to do a pilot study on how much coagulant, polymers, what your treatability is. If you're going to have disinfection, you want to see, you know, how much total suspended solids are in there so you can get your coliform removal. There are a number of disadvantages to the system. One is it's a process, you know, and it's an advanced process, so it needs, you know, people to operate it, you know, and it needs some fine-tuning. It's not just kind of turnkey, you know, just start it up, let it go. It's not just like a conventional clarifier where it just relies on, you know, gravity. You do got moving parts, so you gotta think about that. There is an operating cost associated to it, the chemicals that you need. But all in all, it's a good process, and we should definitely look at it when we're looking at managing storm sewer overflows. If there's any questions, I'd like to answer.